In aviation, especially as a professional pilot, we don't bring work home with us. If we did, we'd have 186 strangers in the house. I don't think we can cook for that many. Surprisingly, I try to avoid Hawaii. I enjoy a lot of what Hawaii has to offer, but I like the less touristy destinations. One of the benefits of flying is to be able to use either a discounted rate for a ticket or to jump seat, which is a professional courtesy, to get to these weddings, to get to these bar mitzvahs and bas mitzvahs. So that's nice.
This is Career Forum. I'm Gary Wallach, executive producer of Career Forum. Choosing a career path can be very challenging. It's hard to know where to turn for helpful information. But here on Career Forum, you'll get an insider's view of the most popular and rewarding fields available to the From world, from professionals ready to offer an insightful look into their respective fields. This is knowledge you won't find anywhere else. Our guest today is Paul Bernsflag, also known as Captain Shraga. His career route has been an exciting one. It required the navigation of Jewish life as an airline pilot. He currently flies for Alaska Airlines. How did he land there? Let's not taxi on the runway any longer. We have a steady green light from the control tower, so let's get this interview off the ground. Paul Bernsflag, welcome to Career Forum.
Thanks for having me.
So let's start at the beginning. Where were you born and raised?
So born and raised San Francisco, California. Went to public school in San Francisco and grew up in a conservative shul. Went to University of California, Santa Cruz. Started off in computer science for the first quarter and realized there wasn't enough people and personal interaction. So quickly moved into journalism and minor in history.
So was being a journalist something you always dreamed of, or were there other things you were thinking about doing when you grew up?
So I was told I was a good writer always throughout high school, and I figured I could parlay those skills into something, hopefully of a degree sort. But what journalism gave me a chance to do was to really broaden my scope and appreciation of so many different fields. I also had to do a minor. I did a history minor. I was able to convince the history board that many other courses, not just history, could count towards the minor. So I'd like to think that the college education not only got me set up for being personal and able to talk about many different things, but really to pursue and question and grow in so many other areas. And then senior year in college is when I actually started flying. Though my daughter teases me I don't use my degree, I believe I use my degree every day to relate with other people, to talk with the passengers on the PA, and to really appreciate this wonderful world.
Let's back up a little, though, because journalist to pilot doesn't seem to be a very conventional career path. So how did that happen for you?
1989, we had an earthquake in Santa Cruz, south of San Francisco. Santa Cruz is only 10 miles from the epicenter. And, as you can expect, a little bit shaken up, no pun intended. So thereafter, I drive back and forth between my parents' house in San Francisco and Santa Cruz almost every weekend. And one weekend, I happened to see an airshow pilot practicing. It's like, you know what? That would be a great article. I should spend some time with this guy and see, how do you get into aviation? And while I didn't get a chance to go up in his stunt plane, I was chatting with his hangar neighbor, a black gentleman who had restored a 1951 Temco Swift, a beautifully polished silver tail dragging airplane. And he took me around the patch. And what I didn't know, or what I learned shortly thereafter, is he was one of the original Tuskegee Airmen. So he had definitely a very rich history to share. And as I got more involved in aviation, I learned that the significance of the Tuskegee Airmen and their challenges that they overcame to defend our country as black military pilots. So fantastic introduction for me into flying with such a man with a rich history. Jump ahead, maybe a few more weeks. And instead of going surfing, which Santa Cruz is known for, I went down to the airport, took an introductory lesson, and figured this would be a fantastic hobby. Of course, also a little bit of an expensive hobby. Throughout my senior year in college, as I was finishing up my degree, I took my interest in aviation and did some articles about flying, did some video and interviews about flying, and then graduated college, moved to Seattle, realized I wasn't flying enough, I decided to take more flight lessons and took the avocation and took it into a vocation.
At least you did get a little bit of journalism work in before you got the aviation bug too heavily, right?
This is true. And actually, they combine quite well. Again, an appreciation and a desire to do research and delve deeper into things really lent itself well to the flying part of things because I could find out more about anything I wanted to. Working for the Museum of Flight in Seattle, I also took those skills, the journalist type skills, made connections, helped create summer camps, aviation-related summer camps, did writing for the Museum of Flight, was able to invite certain notable aviation experts, if you will, to join the kids in the camp, really to fulfill my self-interest, and hopefully at the same time, really enlighten the kids too into careers, not just as pilots, but elsewhere in aviation.
What year was this?
So let's see, this would have been between 1992 and 1997.
While you were training pilots, there have to be some great stories that you can tell about that experience.
Many, many stories. Flying with one student who was 12 years old, who actually is now a captain at Alaska Airlines with me. He would come in, save up his paper route money, and we'd fly, you know, once or twice a month. And to see his growth and skills and, you know, middle of the night, past my bedtime, he wants to go flying. Flying around California, flying around Seattle, appreciating Puget Sound, flying over water, in mountains, onto grass strips. Just amazing, amazing experiences. And truly what general aviation, small airplane flying is meant to be, to appreciate the world around us and have another mode of getting places that maybe aren't even inaccessible by car.
The 12-year-old trainee that you describe makes me wonder why it is that so many young people dream of becoming pilots. What's the reason for that?
Great question. In my opinion, flying is amazing science. It applies so many disciplines. And you look at it and how is it possible that a machine that's heavier than air can fly and go so far and go so fast, connect people, make distances and time really shrink? So I think there's the lure of that. However, as a child, especially when you have no money, you see something like, there's never any way I can become a pilot. And of course, being Jewish, you know, our parents want you to become a doctor or a lawyer or something else, even going into computers. But once one realizes that there really is no restriction to what you can do if you set your mind to it, and of course find funding, I think that really opens up the door, the window, if you will, even the sky, to soaring. Also, I think flying and mastering the physics and the other aspects really is such a challenge. And if you want to succeed, you pursue the challenge, you fight to overcome the challenge. And then, you know, once you can master the challenge, you can really say you've met a goal or grown.
Okay. So at what point does your involvement in aviation go from being a hobby and sort of a side gig to being your vocation?
So as I was doing more flight training, I saw the potential of becoming a flight instructor. No better way to really improve one's skills than to teach. So about 1994, 1995, I began teaching people how to fly. I taught people how to fly for 3 years and worked my way all the way up to $12 an hour. But at the same time, really gained the skills to be a much better pilot. Really gained the skills to understand aviation. And as I was getting towards, I guess, the second year of flight instructing, realizing that you can't support a family on $12 an hour, even in those days.
I'm a little confused, though. So you're, in order to train pilots, you have to be a pilot. So at what point do you actually become a pilot?
The progression, if you will, of becoming a pilot, you start off as a private pilot, which allows you to fly friends, your family, around just for fun. Cannot go in the clouds, though. So when weather is low, you're grounded. The next step of the way is usually an instrument rating, which allows you to use the instruments on the plane to fly through clouds and in less desirable, more inclement weather. In order to become a paid pilot, you have to get your commercial rating, commercial license. In order to even branch out more and be able to do bigger airplanes, then there's a multi-engine rating that comes along. Along the way, some people can avoid it. Some people, and they choose to avoid it. Some people fly freight, but others, like myself, chose to become an instructor. So that, too, is another special rating.
Okay, so when did you start climbing the ladder, so to speak, and getting your various ratings that eventually got you to be a commercial pilot?
I just started doing the natural progression of getting the different ratings and flying. While I was working at the Museum of Flight in Seattle, at the same time, I would do training afterwards or on my days off. And then quite quickly, I realized that my greater focus should be on flying, and I worked fewer days at the museum, spending more time focusing on my skills as a pilot.
When did you take your first commercial pilot's job? When was that, and what airline was that with?
So that was January of 1998, Masaba Airlines, which was a feeder for Northwest Airlines at the time. I had other flight instructing friends who had left the flight instructing world and gone on to this airline and spoke so highly of the people and of the company itself. So I was fortunate enough to have the friend help walk in my resume. And thank God I was accepted to this airline. Now, being a West Coast boy, I didn't know much about the Midwest. And my choices were to be based in Minneapolis or Detroit were the major hubs. And I thought, Detroit, I only hear bad things about Detroit. I don't want to go there. But my first base was Detroit. And looking around and getting to know the community, especially the Jewish community there, I truly, truly appreciated it. And now I live in Detroit for over 25 years and have no interest moving back west, even though I work on the West Coast.
But let's back up to when you began. What is the schedule like for a rookie pilot?
So the airline industry is largely based on seniority. The most junior pilot gets the worst schedule. You just kind of get what you get as far as schedules. Probably all night flights or even reserve, which means standing by for when another pilot calls in sick or a flight cancels. As that time goes on, you work your way up. First, as a first officer, which is a co-pilot. Then, once you have enough experience and a position comes open based on the seniority, you can become a captain, who's really the person in control of a flight or in charge of a flight. But the philosophy is not so much as being the boss, but as much more so as the facilitator, as the coordinator. Yes, I have the final say as a captain, but you know, really taking input from the flight attendants, from the other pilots, air traffic control, and making safe, conscious decisions about what to do.
And what are starting salaries for commercial pilots? And pardon the continuing aviation puns, do they climb at a satisfactory rate?
The airline industry has changed so much. When I began flying for Masaba, my starting pay was $19,000 a year. And we had 34 passengers on an airplane. So having a responsibility with a much lower parnasa than would be on par with what one would expect. Eventually now, major airlines, because of the pandemic, because of a pilot shortage, especially major airlines are having to raise their wages. Regional airlines are having to raise their wages. There are some regional airlines now that bonuses are between $100,000 and $150,000 just for signing on. But of course, after years, putting in the experience, putting in the time, the parnasa definitely becomes comfortable. Think of, you know, the flying progression as going from college to graduate school to perhaps medical school, and eventually the return comes.
That's an excellent analogy. But, you know, for you, there was something else to take into consideration. Somewhere along the line, you also decide to take on more Yiddishkeit, more Jewish observance. When was that, and what was the motivation to do it?
So when I first moved to Seattle, I wanted to become more involved in the Jewish community. In San Francisco, growing up, I was merely my parents' son. Growing up in a conservative shul, in Seattle, I became involved in the University of Washington Hillel. They had a graduate, they call it Grads Plus program, so for both graduate students and young adults. Connected with some of the Rebbeim from Chabad, and also began a journey of appreciation. When I moved to Detroit, really now I was on my own, looking to be part of a community. Met my wife at one of her friend's son's brises. I was connected with Rabbi Elazar Meisels, and truly, what a fantastic, fantastic mentor, teacher, instructor, rabbi, as he should be. Exposed me to parts of Judaism that I never even knew existed, was never exposed to growing up. Delving much more into the background of Torah, delving much more into Gemara, delving much more into Mishnayos and stories, and seeing also the connection of the Jewish community in Detroit. That got me excited, if you would. So that would be 1999 to 2000, we'll say.
So it was really before you became a full-time commercial pilot that your interest in Judaism was kindled. So there must have been concerns about how the fluid schedule of an airline pilot would affect your observance of Shabbos, Kashrus, and other mitzvahs, right?
Exactly. Flying for the small airline, too, a lot of the cities we go to didn't have any kosher restaurants. The best you could do is go to a grocery store, look for a heksher, eat fruit, and, of course, bring leftovers from the previous Shabbos. As the seniority increases, and, of course, being Shomer Shabbos, especially now, most pilots, many, of course, who are not Jews, prefer to be off on weekends. By preferring to be off Friday night and Saturday, that sets apart the schedules just enough that the seniority then lends itself to getting those days off. Not always perfect. I've spent Shabbos in Hawaii with Chabad, but as the system works, pilots bid a schedule. They can manipulate the schedule by trading with other pilots. And even just like flying, if you have a focus to achieve a goal, Baruch Hashem, you can end up with the outcome you wish. Many pilots would prefer to take my trips if I have one on a schedule for Friday and Saturday to take that trip because they want to have the Sunday off. I'll take their Sunday trip. Working for the other holidays for them gives me a chance to have mine off. Further, I always bid my vacations over the Omim Tovim and Pesach and so on. So those days are already protected from the very beginning.
It sounds like, you know, the situation that some might think might be really stressful and hard to navigate for you is actually advantageous because, from what I understand, your roots have enabled you to participate in Jewish observances all over the globe and in some very memorable ways. Can you share some of those with us?
One in particular, not too so many years ago, I wasn't able to get Purim off. However, it couldn't have been any better. On Erev Purim, I happened to arrive in Baltimore and connected with my cousin. And he invited me and I had the opportunity to hear the Megillah on Erev Purim in Baltimore. Okay, perfect. The next day, we flew cross-country Baltimore back to Los Angeles. Purim Day found a Megillah reading actually at one of the retirement homes. And I was a little bit on the older or younger side for those people there. But had heard the Megillah during the day in Los Angeles. And then my wife's cousin's cousin invited me to come join him for the Purim Suda at the Young Israel in Beverly Hills. So that's, to me, one of the more enjoyable, more fun applications of applying Yiddishkeit during my workday.
So you've listed a bunch of advantages to being a pilot. Are there disadvantages?
Probably the largest is being away from family. Definitely takes an Eish Chayil or, you know, definitely a solid spouse to be home to take care of home life while one's away. My wife is fantastic. She works with the kids, picks them up, drops them off, handles whatever else is going on. But oftentimes there might be family events, depending on the schedule, if you can't get it off, that you end up missing. If they're important enough, there are ways to juggle the schedule. You know, so I've missed a few milestones. As I've gotten older and become more mature, I realize the important milestones that need to be addressed. Graduations are important to show up for. Chasanas. And one of the benefits of flying is to be able to use either a discounted rate for a ticket or to jump seat, which is a professional courtesy, to get to these weddings, to get to these bar mitzvahs and bas mitzvahs. So that's nice. But the biggest disadvantage is when things are going wrong at home and you're 4 or 5 hours away and can't get back soon enough.
But it sounds like overall you and your wife and perhaps your children as well have all adjusted and created a good situation.
True. They know nothing different. They always ask, Daddy, when are you coming home? And I'm very excited to tell them when I'm coming home. And of course, after I'm home for a while, they're very excited to say, Daddy, when are you leaving?
Captain Shraga, please briefly outline your career path. How did you get from Mesaba to Alaska Airlines?
So spending 6 years in Seattle and instructing at a flight school and club that had many other flight instructors who've gone on to Alaska Airlines. And even one of the CEOs, actually more than one of the CEOs, had his airplane at our flight school and had his plane maintained there. At the time, Northwest Airlines had filed bankruptcy. Following suit, Masaba had filed bankruptcy. And that was kind of the kick to get it moving, to try to find another airline to move on to. At the time, Continental was hiring and Alaska was hiring. And my loyalty and connection to the Pacific Northwest really had me pursue Alaska. I had a number of friends there with whom I had instructed before. And of course, the connection with some of the leadership of Alaska Airlines. So I had one friend who was in training walk my resume in. Within 1 week, I had my first interview to Alaska. Within the second week, I had my second interview to Alaska. And by the third week, I was hired. It's a very Hamish airline. In fact, at the time, they had Tehillim on their first class meal trays.
Wow.
So, you know, there was a connection. I think it was Bashir to be at Alaska. It's also a smaller airline, so it's much more family oriented and, you know, interpersonal. We daven every morning that we should be put in the right place and meet the right people and do the right things. And sure enough, this comes to fruition. You know, I felt that was a good reason to work for an airline that truly cared.
I know you enjoy Torah study. Does your current schedule allow for much of it?
I have learned Gemara with my rabbi in the airport. My mother passed away about 12 years ago. And I asked one of the rabbis, like, you know, Rabbi, I'm gone so often. I don't know if I can find a minion. What can I do? He said, you can learn Mishnayos. It's like, okay, challenge accepted. So I began learning the Mishnah with him when I was in town. And went on the road with Rabbi Art Scroll. And in the first year, I made a siyum on the first two siddurim that I learned. I've since completed the other four siddurim of Mishnayos. And it's like, okay, what's next? Gemara. So just in order, starting with brachas, I've been learning 10 to 15 minutes a day at a minimum. And I'm just about to complete Bava Kama. So in aviation, especially as a professional pilot, we don't bring work home with us. If we did, we'd have 186 strangers in the house. I don't think we can cook for that many. So, you know, a little bit every city I go to, every time I go in, maybe during a flight, I'll do a little learning. I learn the Parsha every week. Again, there's time during my commute from Detroit to Los Angeles or wherever I might be going. And if I can, I'll drop in. I've learned some Gemara in New York with a friend in a kollel there. One of my chavrusas is one of the very few from air traffic controllers in the United States. Other rebbeim I learn with from partners in Torah in Detroit. A variety of topics. But like I said, on my own, learning in order. And with the free time, wherever I have an opportunity to learn anything about anything I possibly can. And the phone, the internet, Zoom have made learning even more accessible.
Now, you mentioned knowing one of the very few from air traffic controllers in the U.S. Do you run across many Jews who work in the airline industry?
So, surprisingly, there are a few, but we're there. One of the first times I was taxing out at Masaba with this new, well, to me, a new first officer, air traffic control was doing some crazy stuff on the ground, giving us unusual directions. And this first officer turns to me and says, "The Shmegegis." And I turned to him and said, "I didn't know you were Jewish." He turned to me and says, "I didn't know you were Jewish." There's a few Israelis who are in the industry. There's another one at Alaska who I noticed he was wearing the uniform, but his hat didn't quite match the rest of the clothes. And it turned out, sure enough, he goes to Chabad in Long Beach in the LA area. We connect. We all work together at Sinai. We're connected to someone a little bit more strongly when we're flying. So percentage-wise, probably just like the population, less than 0.1%, but we are out there.
Sounds like the flying community is just a microcosm of things down here on the ground, right?
Very true, very true. It's funny because, you know, especially Hanukkah, I bring my Hanukkah. We had a few flights where, you know, the flight attendants oftentimes will bring food, and it's like, well, during Hanukkah, I also brought latkes for them. It also brings out the Jews in the back. There are flight attendants who are Jewish too. I did one trip with a pilot, unfortunately, he's since passed away. And flying with him, we just started a conversation. And as that conversation grew, it brought him back to his years of his bar mitzvah and how much he really enjoyed going to shul. He had pointed out to me that though he was an observant, he would host the Chabad Seder in Cabo San Lucas in Baja California. So having pride in oneself and one's own Yiddishkeit often lights the flame for others to share theirs.
What are some of the challenges of being a pilot?
It's dynamic. Some days the decision may be whether is it appropriate to land on a certain runway at that airport. And it's not an individual decision because we're a team of at least two pilots up front and air traffic controllers and our dispatchers to whom we can contact. We have a whole team on board the airplane and outside of the airplane, the harder decisions can be addressed as a whole. On board the airplane, flight attendants can have interpersonal issues, issues with passengers. The decision is it safe to continue with this passenger? Do they think the passenger will be healthy enough? Can I allay some of the tension between a flight attendant and a passenger such we can continue the flight safely? That's why I enjoy it. I can't imagine ever going into an office 9 to 5 and having the same spreadsheet or the same screen in front of me. Right now I'm flying with a fantastic first officer, really nice guy. We can chat about so many different things.
So what kind of equipment are you flying these days and what are your routes generally?
I fly the Boeing 737. We have what's called the next generation, which are a more modernized version of a plane that was designed in the 1950s. And we also have the 737 MAX, which is the most recent version of that plane. Anywhere from 130 some odd passengers to 186 some odd passengers are what we carry. I prefer to fly trips that go across the country. That I obviously prefer New York because I can find food to eat when I get there. Baltimore to visit cousins. Almost everywhere we go, I have friends or family. And Alaska covers everywhere from Alaska down to Costa Rica, Hawaii, out to the East Coast. My preference, my joy, is oftentimes New York, Baltimore, Newark. I don't mind Florida. Surprisingly, I try to avoid Hawaii. I enjoy a lot of what Hawaii has to offer, but I like the less touristy destinations. This particular trip I'm flying, I'm going up and down the West Coast, so all in the same time zone.
So how much longer do you expect to fly and what's your next act once you've hung up the Ray-Bans?
I like that. So mandatory retirement age for a pilot is age 65. However, our agreement with the company allows us to retire at age 60. Baruch Hashem, I'll be able to be healthy enough to go as long as I can until the mandatory retirement. Again, as my seniority increases, the schedule gets better and I can have a better choice of destinations or days off or just working less. So we'll see how that pans out. Being a captain at a major airline like Alaska is the ultimate end goal, if you will, of a commercial pilot. If we were to be bought out by another airline that had bigger airplanes, then perhaps flying the largest airplane there would be the true goal. But thank God, in my position now, I'm very comfortable with the Parnassa, I'm very comfortable with my career goal attainment, if you will.
So would you recommend piloting as a good field for a Froom person to consider?
I would say consider it, but definitely with the apprehension, as we've discussed before, of maybe not getting a perfect schedule to begin with. Of course, being away from family, so not being able to help a spouse at times with whatever might be necessary to help raise kids or to take care of issues around the house. However, you don't have to be like me and commute all the way from Detroit to Los Angeles for work. If you lived where the airline is based, there's a good potential you could be home every night or at least more often to help out.
So if someone wants to reach out to you to learn more about your profession, how could they do that?
Certainly they can email me pbshraga@yahoo.com. And I'd happily be a mentor and answer all the questions I can as honestly as possible. It's a fantastic interdisciplinary profession. It's never the same. It's always some sort of challenge, whether it be dealing with the people, the weather, the aircraft. So it's very rewarding in that respect. But there are the drawbacks.
Paul Bernzweig, a.k.a. Captain Shraga, is a pilot for Alaska Airlines. Shraga, thank you so much for joining me on Career Forum.
My pleasure.
Thank you for joining us on Career Forum. If you've enjoyed this episode, please take a moment to like, subscribe, and share it with your friends so that we can continue to provide quality information that helps you make informed decisions about your future. To explore possible career options, to speak to a career advisor, or to learn more about Sarah Schneerer, please visit our website at www.sarasch.com or call us at 718-633-8557, extension 37, and discover how we can help you achieve your career goals.